The Innocent, Chapter 7. John gently placed his cell phone back onto the table, picked up the painted China cup, and drank the coffee Missouri handed him, throwing it straight back, even though it was hot enough to scald, barely noticing as the burn migrated from his throat, only to be masked by the ache that already laid in his chest. She watched him but said nothing, just took the cup then refilled it. If John needed something to do while he waited, and if that something was sitting in her living room, burning out his inside on her strongest coffee while talking to people on the phone and making idle small talk with her, well, so be it. She expected him to mention the contents of the conversation she had just overheard John's highly animated half of. The phone had rung barely 5 minutes earlier, and it was obvious that he had initially thought it was, hoped it was Sam. His expression had changed when he'd seen the caller ID. It had been his friend, Jim Murphy. She'd often heard the name Murphy mentioned by all of the Winchester men at varying times. Whether they agreed with some of the things he said or not, they always spoke of him with respect. Apparently, he'd been entrusted with the boys' care on occasion when they'd been younger. He'd also taught the boys exorcism rites, according to Sam. He was someone she had yet to have the pleasure of meeting, but if the man had the patience to be a friend of John Winchester's, then maybe she should try and arrange a meeting with him some day. That would be a very interesting conversation. Most men of the cloth she knew were not overly friendly when her talents were brought up. Any interesting clients lately? He didn't look up at her, kept his attention divided between the cup and the phone. Missouri smiled. He wasn't really interested, but she'd give him the distraction he needed. There was a young woman in last week who wanted me to let her late aunt know that she loved her and missed her.
Doesn't sound very interesting.
No? Well, maybe you need to be privy to both sides of the conversation. What was being said out loud and what was being kept on the inside, silent. Missouri sipped her own coffee. Unlike John's, hers had a cream in it, and it was a lot cooler. The niece? She spoke of love and missing her aunt. That's what she said. What she was thinking altogether, different. She thought about the wail and the anger she felt when she realized that she had been left nothing after nursing the old dear for years. She couldn't get over the apparent injustice of it, and, even though the old woman had been gone less than 3 weeks, she'd been hoping that there was another will in existence, or that there would have been some evidence that her aunt was a little senile when she had signed that one that had been read. That way, it would give her enough reason to contest it. She couldn't get over her 79-year-old aunt leaving everything to a 28-year-old handyman. John almost spat his coffee over the table when he choked, glancing up at Missouri, making sure that she wasn't making fun of him. That's more than a 50-year age difference. That's disgusting. The aunt probably didn't think so. Missouri found herself chuckling at John's horror when he had considered the mismatched couple. He probably had Dean cast in the role of the 28-year-old. Would he have been horrified if the genders had been reversed? Actually, knowing John, probably. You need to clean up your mind, John Winchester. Theirs was not that kind of relationship. The boy was actually a relative. Illegitimate, so the niece knew nothing about him. But the old girl wanted to take care of him, give him his due. It was quite entertaining listening to those two. The silence that followed stretched into minutes before John decided to speak again.
Jim Murphy is going to get back to me in the morning as soon as he knows everything about what's happening up in Maine. He wants to check on the route we took here, too, see if there's any evidence of something following us.
He held the China cup but didn't bring it to his lips.
The hunters in Fairview are looking into a few things up at the Fieldcrest home, doing a bit of research.
Do you trust these hunters?
John really wasn't sure whether or not she was making references back to their argument, trusting others with the safety of his son's welfare when he had second-guessed her. He decided to ignore the possibility that her question was a reproach. He wasn't in the mood for an argument right now.
I know one of them.
His name is Halloran, and he's a pretty decent hunter. He worked with Bill Harvell once or twice when I met him at Bill's place. He wasn't even in Maine on the hunt.
Vacation, Jim said.
Missouri smiled. A hunter on vacation? She wondered if this Halloran was a family man like John, whether or not he had kids. She knew that the Winchester had occasionally had downtime in between hunts, but she couldn't imagine John ever planning an honest-to-goodness vacation. She almost smiled at the thought of John Winchester at the Magic Kingdom, and then stopped herself. It wasn't actually funny. It was tragic. They should have been able to enjoy vacations as a family. Disneyland was probably somewhere they may have gone if their lives hadn't taken the turn it had. As it was, the boys would have probably killed or hunted down everything there. A 6-foot talking mouse would definitely have been seen as something unnatural. Supernatural. She sighed. Is there any news on the cause of the fire? John gazed into his coffee cup with all the intensity of a fortune-teller staring into his crystal ball, hoping that it would reveal the answers to the mysteries surrounding his life. According to Jim, Steve Halloran told him that the local fire department can't pinpoint the cause. The fire started in Dean's room, and when Steve went in, there were definite traces of something. By something, you mean demon?
I don't think so, no. There were no traces of sulfur, but EMF readings were erratic, wild in Dean's room, but almost non-existent in the corridor outside.
So it's not your demon. John shook his head. He really didn't know whether he was relieved or disappointed. Having the demon, his demon, to contend with was always a danger he anticipated, expected. This was something new, something different, something else. One more supernatural danger to add to the ever-increasing list. John picked up the cell phone in front of him.
Don't call him!
Hmm?
You know, Sam. If he's found Dean, he'd have phoned you. If he needed your help, he'd have phoned you. If there was something you needed to know, if Dean was hurt, he'd have phoned you. Bad news always travels fast. Since he's not back here yet, then he's still looking. He doesn't need you distracting him.
She rested her hand on John's, pressing the phone back down onto the table.
You need to trust your son.
John didn't miss the unspoken. Both of them. Billowing mist left his mouth in short staccato bursts. His heart hammered inside the confines of his chest, threatening to escape. To reenact that classic scene with John Hurt when an alien wrought havoc during a Chinese meal in outer space. He could still feel her hand, her fingers slipping in between his, holding on tightly. He knew she was there, but her presence didn't instill the courage in him that he so desperately needed right now. For 4 years he had not had to contend with any confrontations. This would be the first, and from the appearance of this gang, it didn't look like it would be a nice easy transition back into the world of conflict. Of the 5, only 3 came close enough to be immediately threatening. The other 2 held back, either to act as backup if things went sour, or hopefully, because they possessed more sense than to seek out trouble when trouble wasn't looking for them. Maybe they were the ones that were sober enough, or had enough decency to leave someone sitting on the bench alone, alone. The one that sat next to him sank down into his mother's space, superimposing herself over her. She appeared at once his mother and not his mother. He found himself comparing the 2 women. Mary, a beautiful, calm, insubstantial spirit who had never hurt anyone else unless she had just cause. And the other, beach blonde, heavy black eyeliner, a poster girl for a junkie chick. To see both of them at the same time hurt his head. He turned away.
Now that's not very nice.
He didn't want to feel intimidated or scared. He really didn't. Fear is something you could cope with when you were capable of fending for yourself, fighting back. This was something he wasn't used to, didn't want to get used to. Fear was something you felt when you were confronted by hellhounds, black dogs, vengeful spirits, wendigos, werewolves, vampires, demons. Not something you felt when you were sitting in a park you played in as a kid. Not something you felt when you were sitting on the park bench with your mother. He was afraid, though. He hated the truth of it. Hated the churning of his stomach, the lump in his throat, the shiver down his spine and the goosebumps that were not caused by the cold. He hated all those things, and, despite the better nature that he had acquired with a blow to the head, he began hating those who were making him feel hate. The hate was spawning another feeling within him, another emotion that he had not felt in so very long. He began to embrace it, embrace the feeling that was smothering his fear, that was feeding on the steadily building hatred and frustration that had been threatening to overwhelm him. He couldn't feel his mother's hand on his anymore. It was still there. So was someone else's. "He thinks you're too good for you, Cal." He chanced a glance at the boy who had spoken. Boy. Man. He really couldn't tell. Head shaven, remaining stubble, treated with peroxide. Ring through his eyebrow. Tattoo of a spider's web on his neck. His eyes were sunken hollows in a pallid ghost-like face, which was marked with a very unhealthy sprinkling of acne scars. He could be younger than Sam. It was more than possible, but he looked so much older. It's been said that if you live a hard and difficult life, you age badly. By that reckoning, if this guy was younger than Sammy, then his little brother had had it easy while this guy had spent his formative years in the pits of hell. "Is that it? Do you think you're better than me?" The words were spat, and the voice held a threat, cold and deadly.
No.
His own weak voice was laying him down. Frustration and anger fueled each other, but he held himself still on the bench, not attempting to move away. Giggling from behind him, he turned because he hadn't noticed one of the gang circled the bench, only to have Kale put her hand on his chin, turning his head to face her before he could see who was there.
"Didn't your mother teach you no manners? It's not nice for you to turn your back on a lady, sugar."
Her hand squeezed, her nails digging into his skin painfully.
I don't.
"Don't what?"
Dean struggled to find the words, his tongue not obeying his thoughts.
"Want trouble."
"He's a retard." That was the guy with the web tattoo laughing, making fun of him.
"What's wrong, retard?
That cat you're playing with got your tongue?"
"Retard don't want no trouble, Cal."
That was coming from behind.
"Are you a retard, sweetie?"
She brought her mouth to his ear and whispered, "You're too pretty for a retard." He really didn't need this. He really didn't want the trouble that he knew was coming. He really couldn't see an out, though. Physically, there was no way of fending them off and running. Running wasn't an option. What was left of his pride wouldn't have allowed it, even if his body had. If they beat him, if they killed him. Rush of thoughts filled his head, coming faster than he was used to. He found them difficult to process. He leaned forward, letting the air provide a barrier between his back and whoever was standing behind the bench.
"If he's too pretty, Cal, you want me to do something about it?"
He heard what had once been the familiar snick of a switchblade opening. He sensed rather than saw the movement behind him, a movement accompanied by the louder audible crack of bone snapping. The scream was loud enough to hurt his ears, but he didn't move. Cal suddenly looked even paler than she had moments before. She wasn't touching him anymore. She wasn't even on the bench. She was backing away with that caught-in-the-headlamp's look. The guy with that tattoo was no gentleman. He ran without waiting for the girl, pushing past the two who were staring in horrified fascination at whatever was happening behind Dean's bench. Dean didn't turn. He didn't need to, because he knew what he would see if he did. He'd see the same thing that was being played out for him inside his head. The third one, short guy, bald head, being held up by his neck, kicking wildly as the arm that had held the blade hung at a peculiar angle from his body. He felt emotion draining from him, being leached away. Fear, frustration, hate, and the consuming anger that had come in response to the other three. Calm returned to fill the spaces inside as the other feelings were stolen.
"Does he do that often?"
She sounded angry, even though she appeared to be keeping the emotion in check. Dean turned to the blurry image that his mother was referring to. He'd known it wouldn't have been far away, but he hadn't expected this.
"No, it's, he's never done anything like this before."
"I'm glad he stopped you getting hurt, but I don't think I like your friend, Dean." Dean sat in silence. He didn't know what to say. This isn't something he had asked for. It wasn't something he had done. He couldn't bear the idea of her being angry at him. He had never thought of his shadow as a he, always it, and had never, ever considered it a friend. His friendship was not something he had sought. "I'm not angry at you, Dean." She moved from her seat on the bench and knelt in front of her son, the cold damp earth not having any effect on the nightdress she was wearing.
"Does your dad know about him?"
Dean shook his head.
"Maybe you should tell him. Perhaps while you're at it, you should tell him about everything you can do."
Dean wasn't sure exactly what his mother meant. This was not something he had considered telling his father. One thing he knew was that supernatural things were not tolerated by Winchesters. The groans were getting more audible on the floor behind him, a liberal amount of cursing getting progressively louder. Dean rose unsteadily from the bench and looked at the mud-encrusted teen lying on the frozen ground, knife lying only a couple of inches from his useless hand. There were finger-shaped bruises around the boy's neck from where he'd been held up and shaken. It wasn't the first time that Dean had seen someone suspended above the ground by invisible hands. It wasn't generally a good thing, but he couldn't help but be grateful that he had defused a situation that could have escalated into something so much worse. He kicked the blade further away with the foot that actually did what it was supposed to, while he leaned his hip against the bench, allowing it to take the weight off his uncooperative limb. "You should leave before he gets up, or before his friends come back to help him." Was she sending him away? Dean turned to his mother, feeling relieved when her face was lit up by a smile.
"Go on," she said. "Sam's over there on the road. Go. Go and meet him before he gets here, sees him, and starts asking questions."
Dean sidesteps the boy on the ground and began walking towards the road.
"Dean?"
He stopped and turned.
"Yes?"
"If you get around to talking to your dad, could you ask him to come by the house? There's something there that shouldn't be, trying to cause trouble for the family that lives there now."
Dean nodded, not really having to consider his mother's request. If he spoke to his dad, then he would certainly tell him what his mom had said. If.